What's up, what's up, what's up, what's up, what's up, man? All right, guys. Today I am doing a follow-up interview with none other than the realist philosopher. And today we're going to be finding out how things have progressed for him since the last time we had an interview. It's always very refreshing to see what he has in mind and what he thinks is going to happen in the short term and maybe even the long term. So without further ado, guys, let's get right into this. Sir, how are you doing today?
I'm doing pretty good. I'm doing all right. Could be better, could be worse. So middling, I suppose.
Okay, last time we spoke, your health was not the best, but from I'm hoping it's getting any better. You want to tell us about your health and what else has been new for you to hopefully, because you sound better, I have to admit.
So I had a little setback a few months ago. I actually had a stroke, minor stroke, as if things couldn't get any worse. So I was feeling really good. I was feeling okay. And then one day I got up and then I was on the floor and the room was spinning and vertigo. And everything was going in circles. And when I tried to stand up, the room just kept spinning. And then when I would fall back down, it would kept spinning. So I had to call an ambulance, and they take me to the hospital, and they do a CT scan and see this tiny little area of black in my brain, which is, you know, where the brain damage occurred. And tell me I had like a minor stroke. And the reason you're, you know, having the vertigo and everything, it affected the part of your brain that controls, like, how you relate to the space around you and balance and, you know, also memory. And so, gonna have maybe you have problems with your memory, and I have, like, I've had problems with my short-term memory. I forgot how to brush my teeth the other day. I'll put the toothpaste on the toothbrush. It's like, wait a second, how do I do this? How am I... how do I get the toothbrush oriented to brush my teeth? And I couldn't remember. And it took me a while. And I put it in the other hand and I'm like, okay, wait a second. I think I can figure this out. But yeah, so it's been pretty rough. That affected me kind of big. Now I have like, I don't know, big. I took off break. It happened on a Friday. I was back to work Tuesday the next week because I didn't have any choice. I got to pay the rent. I did have a few issues while I was driving. It happened twice where I was looking at something and then the traffic light turned green and then I hit the pedal and something with what I was fixating on and then it moving suddenly triggered a vertigo episode while I'm in my car. You can imagine that's not a good thing. But both times that happened, I was fortunately sitting still and starting to drive. And I just had to like focus all my attention as center pointed as possible. And eventually the vertigo went away and, I was able to drive, but yeah. Go ahead.
Regarding circling back to the mini stroke you had, because people your age, my age, heck, I might even get it myself. You never know. If you didn't call the ambulance, if you didn't have any medical intervention, would you have been dead?
No. This was an after effect of the septic shock I had back last year in July and recovered from in mid-August. It was, it's very common for people who've had septic episodes that serious to have strokes a year and a half after the fact. The severity depends on your health and how bad the shock was. Fortunately, my health was always pretty good, and I've been working very hard through exercise and diet to improve. So that might have something to do with why it was minor. Either it was caused by leftover clots or some kind of a plaque, or more likely a clot of some kind. Regardless, it was minor as strokes go, but strokes are never a good thing. But it wasn't a Kurt Douglas type deal where, you know, your half your face is drooping and for the rest of your life, I can barely understand you, right? It wasn't one of those type of strokes, fortunately.
Well, thank God. Did it affect your vision by any chance?
No, it just, now, one thing that has occurred is I get some sharp pains behind my eyes if I push myself too much. In any kind of task that requires long sustained focus, kind of like driving. But so now while I drive, while I'm working, I know when I should go home. Like if I get a sharp pain behind my eyes, I know I've got about an hour left that I can safely drive. And then after that, my focus starts to get worse and worse, and it gets more difficult to pay attention. So I do have a warning for when it's time to go home. So at least there's that.
How many hours a day are you working? Because I myself, when I'm doing the gig economy, I might be working 12, 13, 15 hours a day. Granted, most of it you're not doing anything. But when I get that feeling that your eyes are drooping, I have, like you said, about an hour to get home. So in your case, how's the market where you are? I don't even know where you are.
Well, I guess it's no problem for me to get into it. I don't want to discuss exactly what I'm doing because, mm-hmm. you know, you could have some SJW nutjob listening and, you know,
yeah.
they know what I'm doing and they could try and report me and pretend that I had, you know, done something for them and I was a problem. But, it's Phoenix, Arizona. The market isn't bad. It depends on when you work. I would say 4 to 5 hours a day max, and that's about all I can really handle. It was getting much better, but then I had the stroke, and so that was kind of like a few steps back. And now I'm just really focusing on trying to improve and just doing things that are going to help with healing, with regeneration, so that I can continue to get better, essentially, and do more.
Oh, yeah, hopefully you definitely will get better, and hopefully the community can also keep on supporting you. How's your fundraiser doing?
So I want to thank everybody out there who did donate. Because of where I'm living and as expensive as it is and the amount of work I can't do, I'm only able to make a certain amount. And so it's kind of like a trap, this place. And I managed to get ahead a little bit, but because of all the repairs on my car, I do the repairs, but the parts and the tools, which are still cheaper than paying somebody else to do it, but it's not cheap. I've had a very hard time saving enough to even consider moving. I am looking at alternatives. I am trying to move right now, trying to find a place. I actually put down a deposit on a place a couple weeks mm-hmm. ago, but these people were very dishonest. This apartment community, they weren't honest about a lot of things. And then they got me to put a deposit down and pay an application fee. And then when it turned out I didn't qualify for something they said was no big deal. Oh, but now it's a big deal. I'm out $157. And they're enriched 157, and it's like, oh, well, say goodbye to your money. So it's just kind of like a scam, this community. They make most of their money probably collecting bogus application fees and deposits. So that didn't work out. So now I'm trying to rent, and I'm looking at places from independent renters, private renters, not large property communities that are corporate-owned. That have a lot of bureaucratic red tape. And oh, here's proof that I've been paying, you know, 50% more rent than you're charging for the past year now. Can you give me a place? Oh, no, you don't meet this arbitrary requirement that we have. Sorry, but we'll take your money to apply and put a deposit down. We'll do that. I'm going to look at a place later today, in fact, when we're done talking. So fingers crossed. So I'm hoping to be out of here very soon. By the way, if anybody out there is a fan of mine and has been for a while and you'd like to help me get out of this roach-infested dump so that hopefully at the very least I can find a cheaper roach-infested dump, I'd greatly appreciate it. I have no problem living in a roach-infested dump, but I don't want to pay, way more than a roach-infested dump is worth, which is what I'm paying here. So If you could help me out, I'd greatly appreciate it. You'll find a link down in the description.
Yeah, that's what I'm going to do exactly. I'm going to pin it in the comment section, the link to your GoFundMe or whatever platform you are using. Are you using Facebook marketing or Craigslist to find a place? How about Airbnb? I know it's short term, but you might get some good prices. And they don't care about credit checks or deposit, from my understanding.
Yeah, the place I'm going to look out today, I found on Facebook Marketplace. I've looked at some places on Craigslist. I did look at a place the other day that the guy wanted to rent to me. Unfortunately, it had no functioning hot water.
Ooh.
And I was like, well, how am I so? And I asked him, did you rent the place previously? Did you rent it recently? He's like, yeah. And I was like, well, how did they take a shower? And he was like, oh, they just filled up a bucket. They heated the water on the stove and then filled up a bucket.
Oh, holy shit. That's even Colombia isn't that bad.
Yeah, so I looked at the guy and I was like, really? And I told him straight up, yeah, I'm not doing that, man. That's like some medieval shit. I'm not doing that. Sorry. And so I had to pass on it. But it was actually a nice place, but he apparently was too cheap to fix the hot water heater. And it's like, it's not even a complicated fix. It was a gas hot water heater. And I'm like, dude, it's just, probably just the regulator. That's like a $35 part. And he's like, oh, okay. And then I never heard. And I was like, no, I'm not. Because this guy, if he's the type of landlord, the type of person that is going to let people live in a place for 6 months, and he's not going to fix the hot water, and he's going to have no problem letting them use a bucket and heat water on the stove to shower, well, I don't want to rent from this guy. That would be a really bad situation to be in. I'm going to pass.
Very good. That's actually very wise. Even though it's like a $35 thing, you can probably do it on your own. Just the type of personality you're going to be dealing with. Yeah. And probably seeing him almost every day, stuff like that. Oh, no, I'd rather sleep in a car than be subservient to a landlord like that. With all this stuff going on in your life, are you still able to make content? I see you uploading to MGTOW TV every now and then.
It's
your
tough.
Content has taken a little bit of a different shift, but then again, everything is changing around us. So how's that coming along with the content?
It's difficult because I have to. So I've been improving health-wise, but it's been diminishing returns, a snail's pace, and then I just had the stroke. So I've kind of sort of dedicated, you know, like every other day I try to plan on it, but then something comes up and if something's coming up, I have to think to myself, well, now I have to prioritize what I'm going to do because my health is not what it used to be. So I can't just do whatever I want. I mean, I felt like a god after I got onto the carnivore diet when I found out that I have an immune, that I have problems with my immune system, that I have problems with certain foods. I found out I have celiac, and when I got into the carnivore, I felt like a god, like I could do anything and I had limitless energy, but I don't have that no more. Now it's like I have to pick and choose. Okay, do I make a show tonight and then tomorrow I have work and this other thing I have to do, or I want to work 6 days this week instead of five? Can I do that if I make a show? Probably not. So I have to prioritize what I'm going to do now because I have limited energy. And so, okay, I'm going to have to not make a show today, and then I don't have as much content. And because of that, you know, I used to get 2,000-3,000 views at least on a video when I got my YouTube channel reactivated after it was canceled back in 2017 because I called Oprah fat and whatever other spurious excuses YouTube could find to ban me then before they had captured and controlled the narrative. And now it's okay to talk about the stuff I was talking about then because well, they have poisoned the well sufficiently that the subjects are now no longer taboo. But back then they weren't, but I'm still shadow banned into oblivion. And because I've shifted the topics, the focus of my topics, they actually have me at the highest level in terms of shadow banning. I am like persona non grata levels of shadow banning because I'm talking about issues now that I didn't used to talk about, that I used to avoid because I knew if I talked about them, this would happen. And you know that you're being shadow banned when you get more views on BitChute than you do on YouTube, and you've got three times the followers on YouTube, and BitChute is 1% the size of YouTube. It's not even. It's like 0.5% the size of YouTube. How am I? That's not even statistically possible unless their thumb is on the scale. There's no way that a platform that is 1/200th the size of YouTube and you have 1/3 the followers, there's no way you're going to get more views there unless YouTube is suppressing you. And they're doing it quite on purpose. So does that mean I'm going to stop talking about those subjects? No, because if I did that, then I would become one of the useful idiot shills, which is all you find on YouTube right now. And they refuse to talk about the subjects I am because they know if they do, the same thing will happen to them.
Mm-hmm. So what are those subjects that you now are talking about that you shifted to? Is it like feminism, communism?
No. So first of all, these subjects, feminism, Marxism, communism, socialism, these are all distractions. These are tools to enact a certain agenda. They're not the actual problem themselves. And the way you know that someone has allowed themselves to become a useful idiot, or they are actually a controlled opposition shill, or they're an industry plant, it doesn't matter which one they are, the effect is the same, is that they only talk about the symptoms. They only talk about the tools that are being used to enact a certain agenda. They're not talking about the underlying problems themselves, the agenda that is driving the implementation of these tools, those tools being feminism, which is nothing more than gender Marxism, all this talk about socialism and communism, creating this us versus them false dichotomy. Ooh, the Republicans and the Democrats and you know, who are all actually both working for the same team. Well, so are all these useful idiot shills on YouTube.
So when it comes to these type of subjects and stuff like that, because I'm going down the same path as you. So if you change subjects and did what YouTube probably would expect from you, you probably could be like Andrew Wilson, I imagine, huh?
Andrew Wilson is just a useful idiot shill. He is not what he appears to be. Andrew Wilson is essentially a controlled op. He is paid, bought and paid for by some NGO or multiple NGOs, just like Destiny. He's only talking about, this is why he's so, this is how you know somebody is either a useful idiot, their controlled opposition, mean they're being directly paid by somebody to push a particular narrative or one of these tools that is merely a distraction away from the real problem, or they're actually an industry plant, is that they're popular on YouTube. It's that simple. They're popular on YouTube. If you're popular on YouTube, that means you're serving the agenda of the powers that be. Whatever you're talking about, you're not talking about the things that they don't want they don't want you to talk about these things. You're not talking about them. And the better you are at distracting away from those things while making people think you're actually talking about and addressing problems that will fix these problems that their agenda is to undermine, well, then you're going to be that much more popular. And he's very good at that. And so Andrew Wilson is heavily pushed, heavily promoted, heavily monetized on YouTube, heavily supported by YouTube, even though supposedly he's discussing things that YouTube doesn't like Christianity and traditional family values, irrelevancies. Irrelevancies, these things were captured and controlled narratively speaking a long time ago. These things are not the real problem. They're just a dodge, they're a ruse, they're a distraction away from the actual problem, the actual agenda that is being pushed. These things are just tools to advance that narrative. And, you know, dealing with them, saying we're going to attack these tools, saying that we're going to change the things that these tools have themselves changed, it doesn't fix anything. It's not going to solve anything. And so they want him to keep talking about these things because it's not the real problem. And they encourage him to do so. And they can encourage the useful idiot fools, the lemmings, the sheeple that follow him to believe that he's actually solving a problem by discussing these issues, which is perfectly okay to discuss now, which should tell you just how much effect discussing these issues will actually have on the so-called state of the nation. They'll have no effect. That's why you're allowed to discuss them.
So from what I heard recently, Andrew Wilson, he like wiped up a 304. Do you think that makes him a hypocrite, or is that
Yes.
part of like his gatekeeping or controlled opposition modus operandi?
So yeah, I've been making quite a few videos on him. His wife even showed up in my comments section to berate me.
Really, on
Yeah.
YouTube?
Yeah, and she was very critical of me and attacking me. And it's very strange because my highest watch video on him maybe got a few thousand views. And the most recent one I did about his debate with Coach Greg Adams maybe got 1,000 views. But she's still coming to attack me. This is how they work, basically. They have this idea, this view of the world that if somebody is an enemy, an opponent of yours, then you just attack, attack, attack ruthlessly, and you don't stop until they shut up, go away, or defeated, or in some way invalidated in the eyes of Andrew Wilson's followers, or just about everybody, in fact, that might watch your content. And that's their modus operandi. And it doesn't matter how they poison the well, they'll insult you, whatever, which he does. I've had private correspondences with Andrew, and he's just, I challenge him to a debate, and he's like, go F yourself, you F. Well, F word, he's called me a bunch of words. I'm basically beneath him. And yet, for some reason, your wife is showing up in my comments, and your followers are brigading my comments in a very organized fashion. It's obviously organized, it's obviously coming from him. That's my opinion. It's pretty obvious how organized this is. And it's like, who? And I'm just a nobody. I'm a tiny little flea, but they're coming after me. So obviously, I'm saying some things that hit too close to home because you're brigading my comments. I'm getting 100 plus comments in a video that gets 300 views, and almost all those comments are detractors just ad homing me, throwing shade, insulting me, trying to deter me from speaking further, which doesn't work because, I'm old. I don't care what you say about my hairline. What do I care? You're gonna insult my hairline and call me ugly, and so what? I don't care. But it doesn't work. It's kind of like the Streisand effect. The more you attack me, the more attention you're bringing to me. So go ahead, keep attacking. I love it. I'll engage with you because I'm an engagement farm. I'm going to use you as my dupe, as my pawn. Go ahead, attack me in my comment section. It's good for views. So you're going to get more attention on my videos by coming after me. Well done. But,
Well done indeed. Do you think that Andrew Wilson is affiliated with Ben Shapiro or maybe working for the same people who run Ben Shapiro?
well, they're all working for the same people. That's what you got to understand. All these the media organizations are all controlled. You've got Tim Pool. Oh, I didn't know there was money's coming from Russia's. Yeah, right. You get 100 grand an episode, and you don't know who it's coming from. Come on. Then he just recently gets out of a meeting with Israel. What is he doing talking to Israel? And then all of a sudden, I don't want to discuss Israel. I don't want to talk about that. It's a political hot potato, and everybody's talking about that, so I'm not going to really talk about it. Old news. It's too much. Everybody's talked about that already. Let's talk about something else. Yeah, this guy, he's bought and paid for, in my opinion. Same goes for the Daily Wire, these so-called independent news outlets are anything but. And the same goes for Andrew Wilson. And as for his wife, yeah, his wife is a 304 indeed. I made a video about this recently, talking about that on my YouTube channel. This guy has no real legitimacy, okay? Both he and his wife, he's a 304 maker. He's bragged about his past of hopping from bed to bed when he was younger. Oh, but no, I'm reformed, you see? And his wife is has had three different baby daddies, got kids from three different men. And we're supposed to take advice from him, a dude that essentially goes around and says that single mothers are bad. Oh, avoid single mothers. Single mommy's not good. Meanwhile, I'm married to a single mommy. And by the way, did you know that the two kids that he had with his current wife, Rachel, they were both out of wedlock?
Hopefully they're not biracial.
Not only that, but Rachel was Andrew was married to another woman, a black woman named Tamaka, when he knocked up Rachel both times. So both times that he had kids with Rachel, he was cheating on his then wife.
Wow, talk about a degenerate, yet he'll tell you total opposite.
Yeah, but you see, she changed. Oh, but you see, that was back in 2012 and 2010 and 2000. I married Rachel 2012, 2013, and even though we claimed to have been married, he said at one point he had been married to his wife almost 20 years, and then almost 20, now 17, and oh, now it was 2013, so it's only been like 12, 13 years. He's always exaggerating to try to a pump up his clout. He's always chasing clout, trying to appear as a more valid traditional conservative or whatever the hell he is. He claims to be a fundamental Christian. He's neither. And so this guy will say, well, you see, that was a long time ago. People change. I've changed. And my wife, yeah, she was once a hoe, and I was a hoe maker. And I cheated on my wife in the past, and I've been married multiple times. She's been married multiple times, and I was a cheater. She was a cheater, but we're different people now. Now we're the very thing that we counsel other people to be. You see, we've changed, which in and of itself strikes me as unlikely, considering that leopards don't change their spots, and people rarely change. And to have two people change at the exact same time and become new, better people is statistically, I mean, it's difficult for one leopard to change their spots at one point in time. For two leopards at the same time to change their spots and suddenly become new, different, better people? Come on, I'm not buying that. And by the way, if you ever listen to his wife, she's a harpy. She's obnoxious. She's loud. She's rude. There's nothing really traditional about her. From what she told me to try and clout chase, you're nobody. I'm running two businesses, and I've got my own successful podcast and career. Who are you, big tail philosopher? You're nobody. I'm a successful woman. But you sound like a Western, you go girl, boss babe, I'm a queen type broad. You don't sound like a traditional conservative, or maybe she sounds like a tradcom for sure. They're all a bunch of chameleons. But you do not sound like a fundamental, real Christian to me. You sound like an effinist. That's what you sound like to me.
You know who I personally find hard to pinpoint if he's authentic or controlled opposition? And I don't even know if you have any opinion about said individual, but Nick Fuentes.
Oh, I know Nick Fuentes. Yeah, that's a tough one because he's been – I don't know that he is. I think he might actually be an independent voice. Not that he'll stay one. He might sell out like so many others have. But now I don't know about now, but I think what makes it more likely that he might possibly be an independent voice is because that dude was down on his luck forever. I mean, there wasn't nobody supporting this guy. And it doesn't seem to be the case still. He just recently kind of clawed his way back from obscurity, and mainly by the efforts of other regular people on YouTube just posting his content by proxy because he wasn't even allowed on YouTube. So now that said, he's allowed on YouTube. Is he allowed now? I don't know that I've seen his YouTube content posted by him. It seems like other people post his content. Is he even allowed on YouTube himself?
From my understanding, he got back on YouTube very briefly, and then they deplatformed him. That's my understanding.
Yeah, well, that's how you know he's probably independent. If he was controlled, he'd be allowed on YouTube because then he would be serving their purpose. It's that simple. Mm.
You know, that's how about Fresh and Fit? Fresh and
Fit. That's a tough
one. Any opinions?
Yeah, they're controlled. They're useful idiots. What are they talking about? Be a PUA, sleep with a bunch of broads. They're not discussing the real problems. All these people are useful idiots. They either are choosing to not discuss the real problems because they know it will get them demonetized, deplatformed, depersoned, canceled, which already that by in and of itself makes them a type of controlled op because they are bowing to the powers that be and choosing not to discuss the real problems. It could be that they're just idiots and don't understand what the real underlying problems are, but I kind of doubt that. So they're either choosing to be silent, which makes them useful idiots, and they get paid for that by continuing to have a platform and thereby a way to make money, or they're controlled opposition working for some kind of NGO like Destiny, or they're some kind of industry plant who was made, created, and put online from day one for the express purpose of pushing a narrative that advances a certain agenda. So I think Fresh and Fit fall into the useful idiot category. They know what they're not allowed to talk about, they know what they shouldn't talk about, and they don't talk about it.
So who is controlling all these people? Who is the powers that be that you keep referencing to?
So there are a number, and there are certain organizations that these people belong to. One that you might want to look into is the Council on Foreign Relations. And most of these individuals belong to this council, and people refer to it as just an innocuous think tank with a couple thousand members. And all of those members are essentially parts of very old aristocratic families or members of already existent banking cartels that privately run the economies of the entire Western world and print virtually all of our money, except for Russia, of course, who has a gold-backed currency now after they kicked out those bankers, which is why you have this proxy war that's going on, actually going on, and all of this propaganda against Russia. It has nothing to do with annexation of territory, which was initiated by Ukraine, by the way, choosing to join NATO. None of this would be happening if they hadn't done that, against NATO's own promise that they would not bring nations, border states like Ukraine in the NATO. They knew what would happen if they did that. They knew what Russia's response would be. And this all has to do with Russia kicking out the international banking, private banking cartel who prints everybody's money and essentially gets real value back in the form of interest on something that initially started with no value, so it's all a scam, it's all a hoax. And Russia and Putin said, no, screw you, we're going to go back to a gold-backed currency. Here's all the money we owe you. Bye. That's why all this is happening with Ukraine and Russia. And these people are the powers that be. And they have various ways of pulling puppet strings that you don't know about, such as BlackRock and other investment firms that, by the way, all of these investment firms get money from the government. In fact, they get the vast majority of their wealth, at least initially, from the government in the form of funds for federal employees. And those funds are then invested with these companies, these investment firms like BlackRock, to then be put into private organizations, private corporations, to grow that money, but it's really just to grow influence and control. That's why you have Disney pumping out garbage that doesn't make any money. How can Disney pump out movie after movie that loses money and still stay in business? Well, they're getting paid by companies like BlackRock. They're getting money under the table, over the table. They're getting money invested. Hell, when Elon Musk bought Twitter, it was $20 billion in debt. Nobody knew about it. It was shadow debt. Nobody knew. And then he found out when he bought it. There's $20 billion in debt that's not being paid back, but now I have to pay it back? But the BlackRock and everybody else that was investing, they didn't have to pay it back then. Why? Because that was kickbacks. That was money that Twitter and Twitter employees were getting in the form of bonuses to continue to push the woke agenda, the woke mind virus narrative. So those are the powers that be, old aristocratic families from Europe, as well as old banking money. Certain family that begins with an R, by the way, not going to say their name, but you know who I'm talking about, folks out there.
The 12 families, I guess.
There are powers that be, and that the bankers are at the head of it, but they are not the only powers. Look at the Council on Foreign Relations. Look up a guy by the name of Aaron Russo. A-A-R-O-N, Aaron, R-U-S-S-O. Aaron Russo was invited to join the Council on Foreign Relations. He was a very influential voice in Hollywood. Before he declined to join, he entertained the possibility just so he could wheedle more information about their function, their goals, out of them. And what he found out was why they were pushing effinism, what their eventual goal is, what their agenda actually is, their end goal. And then he told them, no, thank you. And not long after that, he turned up dead. And whether or not that, you can draw your own conclusions there, natural causes or something else, hey. But Aaron Russo, Council on Foreign Relations, look into that. There's more, and I can get into their underlying agenda later on if you like. But yeah, those are the powers that be.
Their underlying agenda, if you ask me, is division, clash of civilization, Christian against Muslim, black versus white, legal American versus illegal American, I guess. That's division. That's their goal from my perspective. What do you think?
Right. You think that, but you'd be mistaken. It looks that way, but that is just their modus operandi to achieve their eventual goal. So it is division. You are correct that the LGBTQ agenda, the trans agenda, the feminist agenda, the race relations agenda, i.e. Race Marxism, oppressor versus oppressed, using the socialist model created by Marx and pushing it onto various groups and trying to map it onto reality via race and gender, ethnicity, sexual orientation. It is a very good way to divide people, but that's how you divide them before you conquer them. But why are you seeking to conquer them? What is it you're seeking to achieve beyond power? Now, yes, power is what they want, but why? To achieve what? What is their ultimate goal? Power for power's sake? Yes, there is a certain amount of that. These people, these old families, this old money, these global bankers are rich beyond belief. And just the hubris of these people, the arrogance, they are so high and mighty, and they believe they are privy to so much more knowledge, and they think that gives them wisdom beyond the, you know, useful idiot sheeple that follow them and their policies. And believe me, everything we're experiencing now is their policies. They believe in their hubris and their arrogance that they know better than everybody else. And they believe that. And I'll tell you what the real agenda is. The real agenda, it is control, but it's not to be achieved in an end result through the division. The division, the divide and conquer, is to reach that end. Their real goal, their real agenda is depopulation.
Depopulation, get rid of the useless eaters, I guess.
Yeah, well, see, the less people you have, the easier they are to control, number one. So if you take the entire world, that's a big place. A lot of different regions, a lot of geopolitical problems that you have to deal with, a lot of different cultures. And so it makes controlling each of those countries, each of those cultures, each of those regions very difficult. You're having to custom tailor whatever narrative, whatever types and tools you're going to use to control said country to each individual countries. What they want to do is centralize all their power into one region. And they want to depopulate the world to a population of exactly 500 million people. And they want to centralize them in one location. You want to guess where that location is? You probably can very easily.
Is it Palestine? I mean, Palestine
America.
Is probably going
to... It's America.
But they will rule from Palestine, but America is going to be where the Goyim are, right?
Well, America is where they want to centralize everybody. Why do you think everybody's coming here? Why do you think – and the West in general. But what they want to eventually do is centralize everybody into one geographic location, under one government, under one culture. And one of the ways that they're trying to do that is DEI. All this cultural relativism, all of this race mixing is eventually to just create everybody, people essentially to all look the same, think the same, have the same general level of IQ, and it'll be that much easier to then herd them, and I do say herd quite specifically and purposefully, into a specific region and then rule them from there.
So we're going back to the days of, not the Baal, King Nimrod and the Tower of Babel.
Well, feudal in a sense, but with a technological advancement that allows for the control of a much smaller population. You have all of the geographic locations of the world available. So this is being done under the guise of, you remember, people seem to forget about Thanos, right? This is all being done under the guise of, I mean, all you have to do is look at the agendas of the world, the agendas of world governments, developed governments, where the DEI and the environmental activism and the Marxist policies are being pushed to know which countries they want to, quote unquote, diversify, i.e. destroy. That's all you need to do to know what their agenda is. So it's all about, number one, this idea that the world is somehow in crisis and that we have overpopulation and that the environment is at risk and we have global heating or global cooling and we've got this problem and we've got all of these issues. And the reason they push all this stuff is for their main agenda, which is depopulation. And look at everything that's been occurring. And you might say to me, we're realists. How do you know that? Well, all I have to do is look at what's happening. Do you honestly think that these people, with all of their money and their time and their resources and their unlimited ability to experiment on entire populations of countries that they haven't fine-tuned their methods, do you really think that the stuff that's happening right now in the world is like some kind of accident or unintended? No, they know exactly what they're doing. Depopulation. Look at the replacement rates of Western countries. They're all below.
Yeah, even some Arab countries and Iran, they're beginning to get below population replacement.
Japan is in the dumper. South Korea, oh my God, they're not even going to exist in 100 years at the rate they're at. So every country that is developed is experiencing this. Oh, but realists, what about the Mexicans, the people that come from south of the border? They have lots of kids. Within one generation of coming to America, they're also below population. They're also below replacement. People don't know that. Yeah, okay, when they come here, they have a lot of kids. And then one generation later, they have the exact same problem. They're below replacement.
Yeah, when people get into Western society, the women don't want to have kids because they got big daddy government taking care of them, YOLO, they can get flown out to Dubai, OnlyFans. And I guess that's part of the agenda they're pushing on women is a formal fear of missing out, don't have kids.
Right. I mean, you've got the adink phenomenon, double income, no kids. You've got the sink phenomenon, single income, no kids. And this is being pushed. And the reason is for depopulation and control. Now, they tell you and they tell themselves that they're doing it for noble reasons, for a noble purpose. We're trying to save the world from as too many peoples. And we're going to run out of the resources and we need to save the planet. But that's just what they're telling themselves. That's a noble dodge in their own mind. The truth of the matter is they want power. And they want absolute power. And the only way they're going to be able to do that, have that, is to centralize people into one specific geographic region and to have a population below a certain number. And believe me, they did their research and they figured out what that number was to maximize control and minimize any kind of rebellion or individual thought and how many people could live in this specific region, this specific location with this amount of resources and land. And they figured out it was about 500 million. Well, and then we'll have the rest of the world to draw resources from and the planet can recover from all the damage we've done to it.
Mm-hmm. Now, aside from media influencers like Fresh and Fit, Andrew Wilson, buying off politicians, how are these powers that be are able to quote-unquote herd people into what they ultimately want, like you mentioned?
Well, they do it by incentives. It's that simple. No border, lax border control. If you come here, you're going to get free money. Now, that just reward them. Just reward them. Offer them free stuff. They come in endlessly. And within a few generations, they'll be in control because these are all democratically controlled regions, especially in Europe. So they outbreed the local population. It's already happening in England, by the way. I think the majority of London isn't even white anymore. You got that Sadiq Khan dude running things. And, you know, you're putting your life at risk walking around London as a whitey. Well, that's what they want for everywhere. Well, what they eventually want, again, is a homogenous population worldwide that are all the same people, no more races, no more ethnicities. We all mix, or as Bullworth said, you ever seen that movie, Bullworth? We just got to keep effing until we're all the same color. That's what they're going for. I know that sounds crude, but that's really what they're going for. When you get that kind of homogeneity, when you have no more cultures, religions, or any kind of ideological controls outside of the ones that you pull the strings of, and you've just got one ethnicity, one culture that you are in charge of, it's very easy to control everybody.
I think they want us to be like Brazil in a way. Brazil, the country, I think Brazil is like a mix of everybody. They're all one color in Brazil. That might be their goal, be like Brazil.
Well, it's all about control. And whatever maximizes control and whatever allows them to centralize power into their hands as much as humanly possible. And while they tell everybody else that their goals are noble and they sell these prescriptions as a way to be safer, and that's why they fear monger so much. Oh, the world's going to end in 10 years. Oh, it's going to be 15 years. Oh, it's global cooling. Now it's global heating. Oh, we're going to run out of food. Oh, if things keep going the way they are, we're all going to be living underwater. All this stuff is fear-mongering to make people value safety and security over freedom. And you see, it works great. Look what happened with the pandemic. That was a test. The pandemic was a test, and they were pushing people to see just how far people had shifted their mindset, just how much more accepting are people of authoritarian control, of dictatorship, of monarchical control, as it were. How much more willing are people to give up their freedom to feel secure? So that was a laboratory experiment in a way, and it was worldwide, as you notice. They wanted to see, all right, we have been undermining people. We have been undermining freedom and critical thinking and freedom of thought and individualism. And we have been demoralizing people in almost every nation on earth for 60, 70 years now. Now we want to see just how far efforts have gone. And they found out, didn't they? People are willing to give up virtually every freedom they have. Not only in Europe, but also in America, which is supposed to be a constitutional republic. Well, look at how quick people were willing to give up their freedom. Look at how far the government was able to extend its reach into people's personal lives. By so much so that you got to wear this. You can't do this. But not only you can't do this, you have to do that. So not only are we going to restrict what you do, we're going to tell you what you must do. People were like, okay, great, fine. Just as long as I'm safe.
Yeah, like Scamarona was a test, and boy, did we fail it.
Yes.
Do you think that there are organizations, NGOs, maybe like BlackRock that are helping the government, but, you know, not officially helping the government get what they ultimately want?
Yes, that's exactly. And so these investment firms, let me tell you how this works, and this is specifically how pension funds were set up and why they were set up in this way. So federal employees, they have pensions. And the way these pensions are funded is by funneling a certain amount of that person's salary to their pension fund, which is then invested with these, now this is the key term, private, and they are very private investment companies. Now, what the government cannot itself do to influence policy through a private company, like you have to push this agenda, you can't push this agenda, private companies can because they're private. So behind the scenes, the government's saying, okay, we're going to give you, BlackRock, $1 trillion this year in pension fund money that you then grow and then use to pay the pension for people who are right now working for us as well as people who are retired. But you have to push a certain narrative. You got to tell Disney you can only make movies to push this, or you can make a movie, but you got to have a LGBTQ character. Okay, you can make a movie that is for this age group, but only if you have a trans character. And so in this way, they influence private companies to push a specific narrative, a specific agenda. So that's very fascistic, really. There is a parasitical relationship going on between these private companies, these investment firms that, by the way, own huge amounts of these stock and shares and corporations, sometimes as much as 9-10%, which would end up being a controlling interest in the vast majority of corporations in America. And so, hey, we'll give you money as long as you use your controlling interest in Disney or Netflix or whatever to influence what kind of content they produce.
So these NGOs, these third parties out there at BlackRock, they're making these policies that are not like government-enforced policies, but hey, if you want this money, you gotta sing to our tune.
Precisely. Precisely. That's how it works. And if you want to get government money, they're not going to tell you this, right? They're not going to let the public know this. But these corporations, these companies, the president of BlackRock, who you could argue is as or more powerful than our current president in regards to the amount of influence he has in America, that's how it works. It's a quid pro quo relationship. And through these pension funds and also through unions, many of these unions also for government employees, they're able to use their positions like the teachers union to push specific agendas. And oh boy, does the government, especially the Democrats, but believe me, also the Republicans, even though they pretend not, but the Republicans and the Democrats serve the same people. Government loves them, the teachers union.
Yeah, wasn't Trump supposed to get rid of the education board or something?
Yeah, he was supposed to, ran on that. It's still going strong, isn't it?
Yeah, stronger than probably before at this point, now that he's in charge.
Yeah, let me explain how that works. It's very simple, really. So teachers' unions, and the vast majority of teachers in America work for the public school system, i.e. they work for the federal government. They push a certain narrative, a certain agenda, DEI, critical theory, critical race theory. Why are they doing that? Why are they being allowed to do that? Well, because that's what they're being paid to do. And they were taught that ideology in university. And since the vast majority of teachers are women, and these ideologies play to groupthink, collectivist mindsets, ways of thinking, they are far more likely to push these kinds of ideas, these kinds of narratives to their students. And by the way, these narratives, these teachings, these ideologies are oftentimes included in the curriculum. And of course, they're going to teach it because the majority of these teachers believe that ideology. And even if they're told not to, they'll still find a way to do it because they are ideologically polarized. They're activists. They are taught that everything is political. And it's their job to use their job to spread the good message so that they will be remembered fondly and they will be on the right side of history, whatever the hell that means.
How can we fight against these powers that be?
That's the problem, because everybody on YouTube is saying that we can win a culture war. But what you're not understanding is the enemy isn't fighting fair, and this culture war isn't a real war. This is just it's fake. It's faux. It's a false dichotomy. They're presenting this as the actual problems, and you fight that war. Meanwhile, the real war, it's being fought under the surface. And these things that you're actually fighting and that you think you're fighting, and you think that if you can win this fight, which you can't, that you're going to change things, it's not real. It's all an illusion. You're fighting an illusion. Let me explain what I mean by that. You think that going after this person's ideas in the so-called public market place of ideas is going to win you something. Number one, they control the marketplace of ideas. YouTube, even Twitter, give me a break. Elon Musk, free thinking, get the hell out of here. BS. They control it all. They control all the big corporations via investment that comes from BlackRock and all these other investment firms, which if you had took all their combined wealth, It's huge. It's more than the GDP of America for any year, I believe. It's a lot. It's in the tens of trillions of dollars. And these huge investment companies control the vast majority of wealth in America. And so you're thinking that you have a voice. That's the illusion. You're thinking that you're fighting in a war that is somehow going to change some kind of outcome and create the kind of culture you want to live in. That's the ruse. It's all control. It's all control. So the only people that are allowed to speak are people who are not actually saying anything that'll affect anything.
Yeah. Like, what did Fresh and Fit accomplish? What did Andrew Tate accomplish? Nothing.
Andrew Wilson. He's not accomplishing anything. This guy, I know he's people have big love for him in the red pill space, which I find mind-boggling because the guy is a big, giant hypocrite. And I've had people tell me, well, okay, yeah, he's a hypocrite. He doesn't practice what he preaches, or he didn't practice what he preached, but he's got a good message, and he's a good warrior for our side. So I'm willing to ignore his past and even present transgressions, like that blow up he had recently on the whatever podcast when he was debating that Chuck broad, that lesbian chick, and he flipped out all because the lesbian chick, your wife has three baby daddies, three kids by three different baby daddies, and he like flipped out. He started insulting her. He lost his shit. He clearly was not acting. He was not in the frame of an alpha male who's in control of himself as an emotion and his emotions. But realist, he's one of us, and he's promoting a message which pushes a patriarchal agenda, which we want, but it's not going to happen because we've got open borders. We got Joe Biden letting in 30, 50 million people in a 4-year period. Low IQ morons who are essentially now slaves to the government. They're wage slaves to the very corporations that are funded by BlackRock and other investment companies. They are dependent upon that government, so they will push whatever agenda whichever party has that gives them the most free crap. And so you have a permanent voting block, and you've got women. They're going to vote in what they believe is in their own best interest, even if it's not in the long term. But the government's giving them all this free crap. They have a vote. You have, what, 60, 70 million illegal aliens in the country. And it's at least that much when you throw in their kids. Oh, well, they're not illegal. Their kids were born in America, so now they're legal citizens. It doesn't change their ideology. It doesn't change the fact that they're dependent upon the government. It doesn't change the fact that they live in these highly balkanized areas in a very small geographical location, which gives whatever state they're in more congressional seats, and thereby they, by proxy, have more control over our government and what laws get voted in. So you can say you're fighting effinism all you want. You can say that, oh, we're going to churn out ever more kids, even though we're below replacement, who are going to be Christian and fundamentalists, and that'll save the country. But meanwhile, they're outbreeding. They're outpopulating all of these useful idiot sheeple from the third world, who, by the way, even if they wanted to not be dependent upon the government, they got an 80, 85 IQ. They got no freaking choice. And they're coming from socialist countries that are failed nations like Mexico and Venezuela because they embrace socialism. So they're still socialist collectivist mindset. They're bringing it with them. And they're mapping it onto the current governmental structure, who is happy to push that socialist ideology as long as they continue to stay in office, get voted into office. And so you can preach all you want about, oh, I'm fighting and winning a culture war. You're not winning anything because it's just all rhetoric. It's just talk. Meanwhile, behind the scenes, they're replacing you with people who believe nothing of the sort. So you're not winning anything. You're just wasting your time. And that's what they want. They want you to be a rat on a wheel, constantly spinning and going nowhere.
I was actually, I got on Twitter right now, I got like, because I'm subscribed to a guy by the name of Lucas Gage, and he just said a quote that I'm going to read to you. I'm just paraphrasing it for time. He said, the reason why they're letting you be a low IQ anti-Semite spurgeon on the internet is so Palantir can collect your information, and then later on, they'll send drones to kill you. How does that sound?
Well, sure. I mean, that's a good way to find out who your future dissenters are going to be as well. It also serves that purpose, right? Not only do they let you think that you're having an effect, and so you spin your wheels, fighting fights that won't actually affect the outcome of the war. But once the war is won, which it effectively already has been, the country has been so demoralized, so ideologically polarized in the wrong socialist direction. They just elected a commie pinko in New York, and you've got that guy in Minnesota, that retard that ran for vice president with Kamala Harris. Hey, he's an outright socialist moron. You've got what was that one Somali dude? You've got all these foreigners winning mayoral races, congressional races. What about that broad that married her brother to become a citizen? That's virtually been proven now. She's a Congress lady, Ilhan Omar. I mean, the country is literally being taken over. And it can be done so because the vast majority of the country is democratic in nature. Direct democracy. Well, we'll just vote in whoever represents our interests, right? Well, if you replace the local population with people that have socialist mindsets, guess what? America's going to become a socialist country. So all this talk about winning some culture war is some complete nonsense. And one of the byproducts of you being allowed to have a voice and speak is that they know who you are. And once they have accrued enough power, they know who to get rid of.
Yep, that's exactly what they plan on doing. And you think, are we going to escape it? Is it going to get, I mean, what's going to happen to the powers that be? I mean, is this going to go on forever and ever? Or is there going to be like a black swan event? Are we going to rise up against them? I mean, what are the options you see?
So I'm going to be honest with you. And I know this isn't what people want to hear. And I know some people are going to call me black pill. I'm used to it. I don't call myself the realist for nothing. I think if you're MGTOW as a man, you are a realist because you understand all you can do is walk away and not play the game. And if you're a realist, that's what you're going to do. I don't think there's any winning at this point. I think that the disease has spread. I think it's reached the brain. I think that the body is too corrupted. I don't think there's any chemo that's going to cure it. I think we're talking about late stage 4 pancreatic cancer. And I don't think there's any amount of treatment that is going to cure the problem, that being the country and the state it's in now. I think that the demoralization has gone too far. I think that the ideological polarization toward the left has gone too far. I think that people are too disenfranchised. I think that they are too lacking in critical thinking and ability to see truth. I think they are too controlled by their emotions. And I think it's just going to keep getting worse because the core cause of these issues, which is academia, teaching all this crap, hasn't changed. Nobody seems to be doing anything to change it, despite what Trump promised to the contrary. Our public education system, it's continuing to teach this garbage. Hear Trump talking about that stuff anymore? Nope. I think the government is spreading the same messaging. We have more and more socialist communists, avowed communists, getting into office than ever. And it seems like the majority of the population does not support capitalism, which we don't have and probably have never had, by the way. We live in a cronyist society. At best, you could call it crony capitalism. Saying it's a mixed economy is really also rather disingenuous. It's a cronyist culture, and people blaming big business, big corporations are blaming the wrong people. You can't blame them for taking advantage of loopholes, of laws, of things that will benefit them. That's what businesses do. They have a fiduciary responsibility to take advantage of any option they can to grow their portfolio, to increase the value of the stock, to make money for shareholders. No, it's the government and the people that pull their strings that are the problem. It is the ideological indoctrination of the population. I think the pendulum has swung too far in the direction of leftist socialist ideology. I don't think it can be fixed. I think the only thing that's going to happen is collapse. System's going to collapse. I mean, at some point, the devaluation of the dollar, if it hasn't happened before then, there hasn't been some kind of civil unrest, civil war, some kind of actual breaking away of states, the country fracturing, you're going to have a collapse of the economy. And the economy is just going to go belly up. You can only print money for so long. Yes. The powers that be, the banking cartels, the policies we have in place, the nations we support, the policies that allow mass migration to come into the country, and then they send money out of the country to the tune of hundreds of billions of dollars a year. That does help to dilute the effects of inflation in the short term. sending the money out of the country and globalizing the problem. But it's eventually going to reach a saturation point where you just can't. You can't export the issue anymore. And inflation is going to reach a point of Zimbabwe levels. It's just inevitable. It's just a matter of how long. It's just a matter of how long. And then bread is going to cost $1 billion. You're going to have huge levels of – I mean, it's going to make the depression look like a cakewalk. And then you're going to have collapse. And then rebuild. And by the way, this is what the left wants. Haven't you heard their talking points? The postmodern talking points? We need to deconstruct the current paradigm and then rebuild on the ashes of the old. What do you think? You think they're being figurative? That's a literal statement. They just might not realize it, but that's literally what is going to happen. It's going to collapse everything eventually, either by some kind of ideological schism that leads to some kind of breakup of the United States and civil war of some kind, or some kind of economic collapse. It's just a matter of which occurs. But I don't think the problems can be solved. It's certainly not going to be fixed by any culture war, which is just a ruse. It's not going to fix anything. Those are symptoms of the problem. You're just attacking tools. You're attacking symptoms. As long as the third world migration continues, as long as outside forces that believe in socialism and are, by the way, they have to be socialistic in nature because they have an 80 IQ. They're coming into a country where they can't compete with the local population. So they are by default required to depend on the government, which the Democrats love. And by the way, the Republicans love as well, because this supplies their supporters with an unending stream of cheap labor. And so the only way to solve the problem is for everything to collapse and then hope that whatever rises from the ashes, we can somehow gain control of that and somehow marshal whatever resources remain and have enough control over what rises after, enough influence to create something better, which I don't think is going to be the case, because all of this has already been planned out. All of this has already been decided. The powers that be know what the outcomes are going to be. They've done their test. They've run. I mean, what do you think all these uprisings and civil wars have been for the past 100, 200 years? They have been using the world as their own petri dish, laboratory experiment, constantly experimenting on us to find out how we're going to react to certain stimuli. So they already know. They already have their plans in place. Everything that's happening right now is meant to happen, meant to occur, is planned, and they already have mechanisms in place to decide, control what's going to happen after the fall. So I think the only solution is get the hell out. That I've been saying that for a long time. Get out. Get out of the West. Get out of America. Namely, make a life for yourself somewhere else. I know some of you out there are going to say, Realist, no, that's the solution. The solution, we got to stay and fight. The war, the only war that you're able to fight in is controlled by them. The field of combat is controlled by them. You're shooting a bullet, the bullet is automatically stopped. If your bullet would have an effect, they stop it and it can't reach its intended target. Do you understand? You can't effectuate change within the battlefield that has been set up to fight this supposed war, because they control all of it as if it was a computer program. You can't win. And this has been allowed to happen through years and years of systematic demoralization and indoctrination. A love affair with communism and socialism that's been going on for over a century in today's university and in academia. And it has reached such a saturation point now, you're not going to fix it. You're certainly not going to fix it by yelling at fat, effinist broads who think they have a sexual marketplace value of 10 when it's really a minus 10. and trying to get them to change their ways and be more like a feminine woman should be. You're not going to fix that. And you're certainly not going to get women to give up their power. You're not going to get women to say, okay, yeah, we'll give up the 19th. We'll give up the vote. Okay, we're getting all this free crap. We're getting all this special treatment, attention, validation, rewards from the government to be a strong, independent woman that don't need no man until I do. And then if I do, I'll just get the government to take more crap from him so that I don't have to have any responsibilities and duties and that I have it made in the shade and my life is a cakewalk. But I'm going to give that up. It's not going to happen. They're useful idiot shills. They outpopulate us, by the way. There's more women than there are men. And when you throw in the useful idiot sheeple from south of the border and every other third world shithole in the world where the IQ is like 80 or below, and you bring them in here, and then they have to be dependent on the government, and so they follow whatever the government tells them. What are you going to do? And they want you to become dependent upon the government. You have to become dependent on the government. And so you got women dependent on the government, and you've got a huge chunk of the population dependent on the government. What are they going to vote for? Socialism. Communism. Essentially, your life being controlled by a centralized power structure, which is what the powers that be want, as we talked about before. So no, you can't win. You're outnumbered. It's too much. You're outnumbered too much. And you don't have the nuclear codes. They got the nuclear codes. They got all the weapons. What are you going to do? You're going to be enslaved by them as a resource monkey to produce resources for them, as what Marxism teaches, enslave half the population, have them be useful idiot sheeple that produce all the resources so the other half of the population can live noble lives of artistic creation and self-improvement. That's where we are. So if you think that the war is going to be won when you are statistically hugely outnumbered, all the powers with them, they got all the weapons, and they got all the votes, they got all the decision-making authority. What do you got? Oh, I get to call fat effinists, minus tens. Oh, great. That and a nickel won't buy you a cup of coffee these days. So it's time to get out, guys. And you can think I'm black-pilled as much as you want. Whatever. I'm telling you the truth. The problems can't be fixed. The mechanism is too damaged. There's no fixing it. If you tried, it would just blow up the minute you flip the switch, because the parts that you've welded back together, that you have tried to reconstruct, well, there were so many points that I had to weld, that had to be repaired, that had to be epoxy glued, welded back together. It now doesn't have the strength. It doesn't have the material properties to handle the stresses that would be put upon it if I flipped that switch. So you think you're going to fix it? No. It's going to implode either way. You got to run. And that's my prescription. And it's a horrible prescription. I know. It's also the true and real prescription. There's a point of no return. We went past it a long time ago. And a lot of people, they want to believe we haven't reached that point. They want to believe that the solution is as easy as letting somebody like Andrew Wilson yell at fat chicks or yell at single mamas while he's married to a single mama. How much veracity do his words have anyway? None, because even if he's right in his views of these things, culturally, it won't do anything to change the underlying issues that I've addressed, so he's not solving any problems. So again, we're back to square one. What do? You leave. You take your ability to produce resources and be useful, and your ability to fuel what is now an oppressive machine, an oppressive government, which has turned you into useful chattel, and you get out. And you take your resources and your ability to produce with you, so that eventually that new system that rises up also crashes. And then after that, then you can start to rebuild it. And then you can address the issues, because all the useful idiot morons are either dead after it crashed, or maybe some of them now see that their policies failed. But it's probably going to be more of the, former, that most of them are now dead. But anyway, that's where we are.
We have lost about 20% of our dollar value compared to the Colombian pesos, and almost every day it's going down little by little since Trump took office.
Yep.
This is a very strong indication that the dollar will all of a sudden just collapse, and a lot of Americans probably have no idea what's going to happen. What do you think?
That's why they're pushing digital currency. Didn't he just stop making pennies? You think that was for no reason? That was because that's an intent. That's because Trump was told by somebody, stop making pennies. You think Trump is in charge? You're a fool, by the way. Stop making pennies. Then it'll be nickels and dimes. Eventually, they're just going to do away with money. I mean, I'm going to be honest. I haven't used money, like real paper currency, in longer than I can remember. I use everything's digital. I use my card for everything. They've made it so easy to do so. And at some point, they're going to just say, well, you know, nobody uses paper dollars anymore. Let's just go straight to digital. And believe me, they already have that set up. They already have that ready to be implemented at the right time. Probably going to be some kind of false flag. Probably going to be some kind of emergency involving cash. And they're going to be like, well, see, no, we don't need cash no more. Look at what a problem cash is. You need to embrace the digital because look at what a big pain in the butt cash is causing you. Look at all the damage. Look at all the harm that has been done by still using, holding on to a remnant of the past, of the postmodern way of looking at things. That's just a part of the past. We need to move to digital. Digital's better. It's safer. It's easier. You need to embrace that. Yeah, and then everything's going to be digital. And then before you know it, you don't have control of your money. Now all that money that you had in your mattress, you got to turn it in. You got to put it into a bank so they can burn it and then credit that to your digital wallet. If you don't, well, say goodbye. Say goodbye to your money. Say goodbye to any whatever accrued value you have. And once they have that kind of control where you can't hold the value of the accumulated wealth that is your labor over 20, 30, 40 years, well, then they really got you by the balls. And once they have that kind of control, it's game over. Then it's just a matter of time. And they're already headed toward that, and it will happen. It's just a matter of when. This is why I keep telling people, get out.
Yeah, I was at Cumberland today getting my usual $1.06 cup of coffee, and they had a placard that says we're no longer going to take pennies anymore because they're not making it. We're just gonna round up and down to the nearest 5 cents. That's what they're doing now. So those things are coming true. Those predictions of a dystopian future are coming true, and most people totally unaware.
Yeah, they don't seem to realize though that whatever kind of financial crisis occurs, when the dollar does collapse, and it will, it's inevitable, they'll swoop in like heroes. Look, we have a solution. And you see, it happened because we didn't have enough control. We need more control over the economy, you see. Us being the Federal Reserve, which is in no way, shape, federal, and is totally 100% privately owned, except for the 20% that the supposed federal government owns. But the truth of the matter is the other 80% is privately controlled. And so, you know, the federal government dances to the tune of the Federal Reserve and the powers that control it, namely those powers that begin with a big R in their name, start with an R, end with child. And eventually, they're going to control all currency. It's not going to be based on gold, which it isn't anymore. It's not going to be based on even paper, which you can hold in your hand. And you can, at the very least, having your mattress, you got control over that. No. They'll have control over all of it. And once they have control over all of it, they have that much more power over you. I mean, already they're debanking people, right? That poor Nick Fuentes guy, he can't even use a bank. Credit? Nah. No. Well, how does he even, I mean, his life, a poor guy, but for having opinions that actually address some of the underlying issues, which is why he's been so heavily canceled. But even he doesn't address all the issues I address fully, which is why I'm so heavily shadow banned. But that's their next step, to cancel currency entirely. The economy collapses, they swoop in, this gives them all the control they need. And it's not as if they don't already have enough, but that's going to be the final nail in the coffin, the final domino that's fallen. And we're already beyond the point of no return, but that's going to give them even more power, even more control. And so they're working systematically, and they have a prescription, a set of choices, a set of policy implementations, and they're going step by step by step. They have a plan, and they're following it to the letter, and they know what's going to happen, and they have control over what's going to happen. So they've had too much time to experiment and use us as guinea pigs to understand and know how we're going to respond collectively and individually. And so it's game over already. People that don't realize that. So you just got to leave. You got to get out. And the system that they're setting up is one that is built on a foundation of sand. And so it will collapse eventually. And then when that collapses, only then are we going to be able to come in and rebuild from the ashes. And then we can affect change then. Right now, no. They hold all the cards. It's really that simple.
What's your personal plan to exit the West if you have one, or thinking of putting one together?
So, yeah, I should have stayed out, by the way. I made a huge mistake coming back after my business tanked. I was very wealthy at one time. A lot of people don't know that. I was, at least on paper, a millionaire. I actually had that much of the bank at one time. My business tanked because of certain trade policies between America and China at the time. I made some poor choices. I take full responsibility for that. Coming back to America was a huge mistake. If I could do it over again, I would have went to another country, Thailand or something like that, and rebuilt my business, or just built another business, or used what specializations I have educationally, human capital wise, to do something else. Coming back here was a huge mistake, so I'm going to remedy that. 6 to 8 months, once I am physically, hopefully, improved enough to get back to my trade, or at least doing some work that provides a more stable, better income, I'm going to save. And within a couple years, a year, maybe two at most, I'm going back overseas and I'm staying. I'm not coming back. And I recommend, and by the way, those of you out there who say, realist, not everybody has the ability to do that. Not everybody is high enough IQ or has the ability entrepreneurially or just work-wise, human capital-wise, to accrue enough wealth to do that. You're wrong. They want you to think that, so you stay in the country and remain on the plantation so that you keep producing tax revenue, so that you don't produce excess resources that then allow you to escape. It's a defeatist mindset. It's a self-fulfilling prophecy. No, you absolutely positively do have that ability. Work more hours, work overtime, stop buying the Monster energy drinks, stop buying the modifications for your car, stop buying the little tchotchke crap, your collectibles, whatever hobby you have. Cut back to the bare minimum. Become a stoic, minimalistic, frugal individual as much as you possibly can. And I guarantee you that within 2 years, you'll have saved enough to get the hell out of this country. While at the same time, start taking lessons, start taking courses online in something that has human capital that is transplantable to other places that allow you to make a living in another country. Wondering what that is? Do research, man. Look at other countries. Look at what industries they're lacking in. Look at what jobs exist in those economies that you want to go to where they have shortages, and then study those things. You have power, you have choices, you have options. You just don't know it because you've been so demoralized and fed this false narrative that you don't have the power to do these things, that it's become a self-fulfilling prophecy in your life, and you just don't think you can get out, that you have options. But you do. You can. Trust me.
I agree with you 100%, and I'm living proof of that. My Egyptian shawarma concept is doing super well in Colombia. In fact, I get two, maybe three more restaurants, and I don't have to come back to America ever again. So you are right. Find something that the people over there are lacking, do it better than anybody else can, and that will be enough for you to actually succeed. I mean, I'm paying them $20 a day to work at my restaurant, not an hour. My rent is only $600 a month for a place at a mall. People have no idea how much better it is out in outside of America. And they gotta do this right now before we get into the digital currency,
Yes.
before we lose our money value, because we lost 20% against the Colombian pesos in half a year.
It's not only control, it's not only about the value of the money, but it's about the control of the money. I guarantee you, once they can control that digital currency, once they have it in control, well, you're not allowed to transplant this outside America. There's certain restrictions. We need those restrictions to protect our economy. Because look what happened when we allowed our money to be used so frivolously. We had a collapse, which we engineered, by the way, so you would lose faith in paper currency and then embrace our digital currency, which now gives us total, complete control over your life. That's all manufactured by them.
Yep.
So,
And Only 27% of American people have their passports, and very few have left the country. They probably have no intentions of staying overseas or doing anything like you did. I mean, for what you did in China, I mean, I don't know exactly what you did in China, but for you to almost be a millionaire at one point, or come close to it,
I
that
was
has to be
actually.
something very good.
No, I was a millionaire. I did have that much in the bank at one point, but let's just say I was too empathetic. I had employees. I was actually more concerned about them than I was myself. I continued to employ them. I continued to prop the business up. I made some bad choices on my part. And honestly, yes, I know not everybody can do that. Starting a business, making it successful, it takes a certain type of individual. I guess maybe there are IQ, thresholds that are required, but that doesn't matter because you can do something similar in your own life by just learning a trade and doing it well. And you have a lot of advantages as an American. American education system, getting an education in America, the fact that you grew up in America, if you're like me, if you're of a particular Caucasian persuasion, you already have a, generally speaking, good base IQ that is already at least one standard deviation higher than whatever country you might be considering going to, depending on the country, of course. If we're talking about Asian nations, Thailand or Vietnam, they might actually have a higher base IQ. They were doing Korea, certainly doing Japan. But that said, you can maximize your human capital. And in any field there where there's a shortage, and you just have to be purposeful in your intent and what you learn, and just make sure it's something that you can tolerate doing and stomach, that fits somewhat into your character, personality, and your way of thinking, and who you are as a person. You have to really do some deep thought and some thought experiments. Put yourself in that role. Can I do this long term? Imagine a set of various scenarios working in that position over a long period of time as that thought experiment. How do you react? How do you do? How do you handle whatever various stresses and pressures? And if through that thought experiment you find out it doesn't work for you, then pursue something else that does, that fits your nature, your demeanor, better. The key is to find something you can stomach doing that fits who you and what you are, your nature, your ontology, and then pursue it. And then you have that human capital and you can take it with you wherever you go.
100% true. Like, my personal advice to other Americans stuck here is get your CDL. You don't need a college degree. Work your ass off over the road. Have about a year and a half, 2 year of salary saved up, probably close to 100K. Go overseas. Start a restaurant if you're inclined. Start a mechanic shop. Do something overseas, like you mentioned, even if it's not super duper high IQ, you can have people working for you for the equivalent of $20 a day in your mechanic shop, and you can charge, not American prices, but a decent amount of money.
Yeah, there's solutions to most problems. People just don't have the flexibility of thought or the critical thinking skills to come up with those solutions, which is part of why the current education system that we exist within and under doesn't teach those things. They don't want you to have the ability to think independently, to think critically, to solve your problems. They want you to be dependent upon them, the government.
Opposite of what you're talking about, maybe, just maybe, most people need to be slaves.
There is some theory about that. There has been some thought put into that by philosophers as to whether or not the majority of people even have the capability to think for themselves. In fact, there's been studies done that find that the majority of people can't even think in pictures, that they don't have the requisite ability to imagine visual scenarios in their head, that they can't even visualize things as if they saw them. I think it's like 75% of people can't actually visualize beyond vague ideas and notions and their feelings.
Oh
That's
wow, like when I
crazy.
visualize,
That's crazy, right?
yeah, when I visualize stuff, I visualize stuff and I work toward it. Might take a year and a half, 2 years, 3 years even, but when I visualize a lot, but you're telling me 75% of the people out there can't visualize a concept?
Well, not in a visual way where it is fully fleshed out and developed to an endpoint, or even pictures. Like, they can't even visualize a picture in their mind. Everything is feelings-based and not materialistically visible within their head. And there has been a lot of conjecture as to whether or not this is genetic or if it's learned. I think it's a mix. I think that most people can, at the very least, learn to visualize to a certain extent, but they're not taught to because they're not given the tools, because they don't want you to have the ability to visualize, because you need that kind of ability to formulate goals, to come up with end result scenarios that you might be working toward. So if you don't have the ability to visualize to enough of an extent that you can flesh out your goals, that you can make your desires reality by following a logical chain of events to eventually come up with a final picture, then you have no ambitions. Then you're just that much more of a mindless, useful idiot, sheeple, useful eater, instead of a useless eater, that in turn makes you into a producer. And that's it. You just do what you're told, and because that's all you can do. And you are just a mindless automaton to a certain extent who produces resources and follows the rules.
Yeah, most people fall, sadly and unfortunately, into that category. And maybe they need to be, you know, called a little bit, thanks to robots and AI. I'm not going to lie, man. Not going to lie, but I think most people need a good, either need to be enslaved or they need to, be properly taken care of, if you ask me. But then again, I don't live in the West. I'm focusing more on Ukraine, Colombia, where there's a little bit more life. There's no life here in America. I took notice most people are on their phones. They're on all sorts of medication. They're alcoholics.
Yeah. Well, this is all
to be here.
Well, the world itself, when you reduce everything down to materialism, it becomes a very depressing existence. So for most people, it's better to escape that reality than deal with it head on. It's just too vacuous. It just sucks the life out of you. So as you said, it's lifeless. You're not wrong there.
But are you going to go back? Are you going to go back to China, or is that like a door closed?
No. China? So the business, it's changed. When I was in China, there were about 660,000 expats there. It doesn't sound like a lot in a country of 1.4 billion, which, by the way, I don't think is the population. That's a lie. I think they might be below a billion, quite possibly, because of their draconian one-child policies and their pushing of ethnicism there, without the war on patriarchy and men to divide people, to implement a new ideological paradigm. They already have total control. Ethnicism was pushed in China to split men and women up so that women would also enter the workforce and you'd have double the population to tax. You need all the tax money you can get in a communist country because they're so poor at spending it on behalf of the population. Insofar as going back there, though, no. Now it's about 300,000 expats. It's less than half what it was just 6 years ago, and they're not doing anything to change that. They're not implementing any policies or programs, either immigration or incentive-wise, insofar as private companies, to bring more foreigners in. They passed a bunch of laws. For example, a great percentage of the population when I was there, a lot of them were foreign teachers. Now China has become so anti-outside education sources because they're afraid of people being ideologically polarized in the other direction toward individuality, towards ability to think critically, toward Western ideals, that they have passed anti-education laws, anti-tutoring laws. They've become far more stringent about who can become a teacher in that country. And a lot of English teachers, a lot of foreigners teaching English in China, it used to be very popular, used to make a lot of extra capital, a lot of extra cash by doing private tutoring. And now that's illegal.
The whole TEFL and English as a second language. I was looking into that myself in Ukraine, but in all honesty, you need a college degree for it and
So
stuff like that.
that's not actually true, depending on the country. So there are some countries where it's still a great option and one that you can pursue. And this is something else I would tell people out there: they explore all your options. If you're somebody who's good at explaining yourself, who has good oratory skills, who is very gregarious, and you have a better than average IQ, even if you don't, if you have some ability to teach, to impart ideas to people in ways that they can simply easily understand, that might be something that you pursue. And you can do it in some countries like South American countries. Some of the East Asian countries still will allow you to teach there without a college degree. You can get what's called a, I think, a TOEFL,
Yeah,
TOESL.
that one. Yeah.
And it does cost a little, but it's not too bad, around $1,300 to $1,500, the best one. If you get like 140 or 150 hour TOEFL certification, you can teach in like dozens of different foreign countries, not just a few. There's like 30 or 40 that you can teach in just with that. You don't need a college degree. And it pays pretty good in regards to the local currency. Oftentimes, they give you a free housing. And so you're able to save your entire salary. So when the year is over, you've got 10, 15, 20 grand that you can just bank and you can sign up for another year. Maybe the visa requires you to return to your home country. In some cases, you don't have to. But if you get that much saved up, you go back to your home country, you spend 5, 6 grand for the summer, you've got 10, 15 grand left over. You go back, you work another year, and you just keep accruing wealth. And after a few years of teaching, you got 50, 60 grand in the bank. You know how to live overseas now. You've gotten your sea legs. You know how to exist in an expat environment. Now your options have multiplied and you can go somewhere else and you are better, more knowledgeable about this industry, how to survive in a foreign country. And so that's yet another option that you have. Like I said, you don't have limited options. You don't lack the ability to get out. People have told me this. I tell them, you are wrong. You do have options. You just need to know how to exploit them. And that's what I try to teach people, in addition to, telling them who the real, powers are and what the actual problems are. But, I don't, my voice isn't heard because they own all of the social media platforms. And when you talk about the things I do, you get 300 views a video, if that, maybe 50. And then on BitChute, I get more. So
How about Rumble? How's Rumble working for you?
Rumble's is just part of the machine. You
Yeah,
won't
they
get any
are.
views there either. I've tried. I couldn't get any growth. I posted religiously there for like a year. Before I got sick, I got no traction. Rumble is just another controlled platform. They're no more free in their speech or how censorious they are or aren't than YouTube, to be totally honest. They shadow ban people like me just as well there as they do on YouTube.
Yeah, and another thing for all those listening out there, if you're like American or Western, you're white, you can pretty much, and you just have a, you can pretty much get any job teaching English pretty much anywhere in the world if you have the proper requisites, which, like you said, it's not that big of a standard that you must adhere to. So that's another great. I know a guy in Ukraine from the UK. That's all he does.
Yeah, and it's a good living. And if you like
Yeah.
kids, you do very well. Now, of course, if you don't like kids, well, might not be for you.
Adult, yeah.
Yeah, you can do adults too, right? There's lots of private training centers, and also you could teach like high school or work at a private school, and they have a lot of the same requisites. And the reason this is because there's such a shortage that they are willing to accept people with a lowered standard. And you just
Qualifications, yeah.
Yeah, but but really, let's be honest here. Having a university degree doesn't really mean all that much in teaching when you consider all of the requisite tangential subjects you have to take. You're getting a degree in English, but you have to take all these other courses. And by the time you look at it, you may be at 150 course hours to get your bachelor's degree. I mean, how many hours did you spend in that English class as compared to, say, a TOEFL? Maybe 4 times, but maybe half. I mean, how many hours in that class? 1 hour, twice or 3 times a week, for what, 9 months? I mean, when you add all that up, few hundred hours? That's not all that much, really. That's not all that impressive. So 150-hour TOEFL, it's doable, and I think in most cases it fits the bill of what is necessary, especially if you as a person continue to study and improve your understanding of grammar and pronunciation and all of that. You can continue to educate yourself and become a better teacher to such an extent where I think that after 5-10 years, you could confidently teach in an American public school if it wasn't for that stupid arbitrary, oh, you must have this piece of paper requirement.
Yeah, I'm going to look back into teaching again. I'm going to do that post-truck because, you know, for me, truck driving is 100% about the money.
Yeah.
Teaching is going to be more about the new type of lifestyle than money. I mean, money is going to be important. But, yeah, that's going to be in a post-truck world where I can get to, like, meet new people, stuff like that, give back to the community, so to speak. So
that's a great option because it allows you to get endless visas to that country where you can then work in that country. And yeah, mm-hmm. you're only supposed to technically work at whatever employer is sponsoring your visa, but they overlook that in most of these countries. And you can do private tutoring on the side and continue to save money. And it's easy. Everybody I spoke to, like I go to a bar, it was mostly English teachers, and I would sit down and I would talk to them and they would talk about how easy it was. Just, it's so easy, man.
It's easy. Not only that, like I know for a fact, I have a Ukrainian lawyer. He's going to help me get a business visa in Ukraine. It's not that expensive. Like the whole process is going to cost me $1,000 and I'll have the right to work there, get a bank account, maybe even get a driver license, residency over there.
Nice. See, that's the route to go. Whatever enables you to get out, be it money, or a profession in another country that allows you to save money, or both. Whatever allows you to get out is what you should avail yourself of. And go for third world countries, in my opinion, because those are not able to be as ideologically influenced. And they're really not as much of a target because of their lack of development. Whitey, white, Caucasian Europeans are the target because we are able to produce, just statistically speaking, just looking at the overall GDP wealth that can be generated by nations, Western European nations, including America, which really is a European satellite nation. We were created by Europeans.
Mm-hmm.
We do still embrace many of European values and law, especially from like English common law. And so, you know, not to sound ethnocentric, even though everybody else is, so why can't I be? Whitey has essentially, just by far, from examples that we look at, been able to produce more wealth than anybody else. He's the most independent, the most entrepreneurial-minded, the most able to produce excess wealth, and that's why he's got to go. He's too independent. It's too difficult to control people that are independent and able to produce vast amount of resources far beyond what they need to survive. So that's why European nations are on the chopping block. That's why they're the ones that are being primarily divided, conquered with DEI, critical race theory, gender theory, trans, LGBTQ, feminism. So go for third world nations if you can.
Exactly. Colombia, Ukraine, even that, I forgot the name of that country that's below Russia, that, I forgot the name of it, but one of those countries, they don't care about anything over there. They have none of this DEI BS. Yeah. I mean, we had a really good conversation. We went from like black pill to like white pill. Granted, you have to leave the country for it, but my God, people, we have the best money, best education here that we can use overseas as a springboard. We already would. I mean, the fact that you can go from America to like Ukraine, Colombia, you're automatically top 5% in that country, if not maybe top 3% already.
Yeah, you want to go somewhere where people are still worrying about whether or not they're going to be able to feed themselves and clothe themselves. We have too much free time. We have too much decadence here. People have too few problems, which is part of what the powers that be use to influence people. their need, want, desire for meaning and purpose in life. And since everybody has been so keyed, so primed, so polarized toward materialism, they've lost track of what's really important. And so here come these, certain powerful, rich, wealthy entities that work through our government, work through the education, and tell them, well, here's where you're going to find meaning and purpose. Become an activist. Be somebody who champions X, Y, Z group, and then you have meaning and purpose, and you'll be virtuous too. And by the way, it's very attractive because it's cheap virtue. You don't have to do anything to get it. You don't have to produce kids, raise kids, give them values, and impart any moral principles to them. No, you just got to say, hey, don't be bad. Don't you treat this group like that. You should say this. You should be that way. And suddenly you're virtuous. Oh, wow. Yeah, you're a great person. I get to feel like I'm a good, great person. I get to feel like I have meaning and purpose. And, I'm virtuous. It's cheap virtue, though.
That is true. That is true. So before we wrap it up, is there anybody in the manosphere or in the general news out there talking about what you're talking about?
No. This is the problem. To a certain extent, most people in the social media sphere have to toe a certain line. They can't talk about a certain little country in the Middle East and how disproportionate their influence is in the world to their own GDP and population as compared to the rest of the globe. We're not allowed to talk about that. We're not allowed to talk about who's really in control behind the scenes. We're not allowed to talk about how a certain narrative is pushed using our own tax dollars in the form of pensions. We're not allowed to talk about how certain government employment unions are used to kick back money to politicians, so long as those politicians push a certain agenda and make sure that everybody that works for that union, works in that government role, also pushes a certain agenda. And you've got this, cycle of money in, money out, to the politician, back to the union, back to the politician, back to the union, this constant churn. We're not allowed to talk about any of that. If you do, you get unperson like me. You get shadow banned to the point where I get more views on BitChute, which nobody's ever even heard of, than I do on YouTube. So I wish I could say there was somebody out there talking about these things, but anybody and everybody that tries to talk about all the things I've just addressed in this video, not just some, they don't have a voice. And that's why I'm saying, if you are on YouTube and you've got a voice, you're not saying anything that will make a bit of difference. Because if you were, they wouldn't let you speak, yo.
Very true. Are you on Twitter?
So I got my Twitter account mysteriously got banned.
Oh, wow. Really?
Yeah,
again?
So I had to start a new Twitter. I'll send you the link for that. You can put that in the description
as well. Comment section. Now, why did they ban it? I mean,
I have no idea. I don't know, because I couldn't get in. So, yeah, I have no idea. I couldn't. And now I can't open the account anymore. I have no idea why. I mean, I know why, but we both know why.
They didn't tell you.
Of course not. Well, because I talk about this stuff. Because I talk about what's the real problem, what the real agenda is, and nobody wants to talk about that. And so if you do, you get unpersoned like I do. Reference Georgia Waystones. Reference that those stones in Georgia were recently blown up where
– Georgia guidelines.
Guidelines. Those stones, yeah, where they already told you that with their agenda. At 100% anonymous individual who to this day nobody knows who it was told you what the elite's agenda is decades ago. To this day, nobody knows who he is. I have my own theories about who he was. I'm not going to get into it. As to what his connection was to the Council on Foreign Relations and the powers that be. If I had to guess, I would say he was probably a character similar to Aaron Russo. Probably somebody that they courted as a potential member. And once he found out what their agenda was, kind of like Aaron Russo, he decided to spill the beans. And he did it in his own way, which was those stones. Now, whether or not he was – by the way, nobody could find out who he was, but he's almost certainly dead. I have an idea who he might have been, and he mysteriously also ended up dead not long after. It's interesting how anybody that talks about this stuff who has had a direct connection to the Council on Foreign Relations and these people ends up dead. It's so interesting how anybody that could be taken seriously because of their connection, their firsthand knowledge, just suddenly mysteriously croaks. But, you know, I'm sure it's just a coincidence that this always happens.
Yeah, kind of like the six members of the ADF party in Germany who all of a sudden died of heart attacks.
Oh,
you heard about that?
No, yeah. No, I didn't, but I'm going to look into it. Yeah, it's very interesting. Yeah, right? How anybody who was directly connected to the Clintons and any possible wrongdoings they might have done. It's just so many suicides surrounding those people. It's interesting. It's a lot of women and men. You would think it was almost exclusively men that would be offing themselves considering the numbers, but lots of women too. It's like, wow, boy, people that work with the Clintons just have the worst luck.
Yeah, right. You think
they want to
so.
Kill themselves for some reason. Although, you know, if you had to work with Hillary Clinton, I think you'd want to off yourself too. God, what a harpy she is.
Oh, God, I feel sorry for Bill.
Yeah, that poor guy. You can understand why he got the, you know, sloppy
Monica.
BJ from Monica. Yeah, nobody cared,
don't
of course.
Blame him.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Come on, you can't blame him. I think he could have done better, though, but she was a bit of a chunky monkey. But regardless, you know, I guess he doesn't have to look too much at her figure when she's under the desk. So, okay, whatever, Bill.
Yeah. Are there any last things on your mind? You want to bring up anything we haven't touched on or circle back to?
No, not really. Just if anybody else out there would like to know a little bit more about, you know, life overseas or how you go overseas, live overseas, I might actually make a video about that and get more in depth into the processes and the things you can do and have to do to live overseas. So I think that might be a good idea. But you can email me. I'll send the email to Amir here, and he can put that in the description. I'll send him all. I'll give you all my social media links, and people can just choose or not choose to contact me. Other than that, I'd just like to ask anybody out there if you felt you got anything from this interview, this communication, this talk, and maybe you'd like to know more, or maybe you'd just like to you know, appreciate my content. If you could, if you would consider donating to my GoFundMe, that'd be great. I'm not above asking for help if I need it. I rarely do need it, but it's been a rough year. And trying to get out of this this roach hotel I'm in, and it's proven very difficult. So if you could make a donation to my GoFundMe, I'd greatly appreciate it. Or follow me on Patreon, whichever floats your boat. Whatever you can afford to donate, any amount is greatly appreciated. And yeah, I guess that's it for things I have to say, I suppose.
Yeah, well, this was a great interview. It's always good talking to you, seeing. I'm very happy to see that you're far more better off than the last time I spoke to you. So that's a big plus for me.
It's been rough.
it's been
Oh, my God. It's this. Oh, boy. I don't know that I would, if I had the choice, if I would negate all of it, though. Because while this has probably been the roughest 15 months of my life, it also, has it been more than that? July, August, September, October, 16. It's been the roughest 16 months of my life, but I don't know that I would negate it because honestly, it's also like taught me a lot. And I think I probably have learned a lot, grown a lot as a person, I think. I think it's taught me a lot. And I think I got more out of the experience than has been taken away. So yeah, I'm maybe not as healthy as I used to be, but... I think I have a better, broader perspective on things than before. And I don't fear dying anymore. If I ever did, that's long gone. So, and I have a new appreciation. Well, I don't know about a new appreciation for life, but maybe I even appreciate it more than I did before, if that's even possible. So, yeah, I guess that's all I have to comment on.
Yep. Were you able to get new insurance for yourself? Are the hospitals still hounding you? Anything like that? If you want to talk about anything like that, because it would be interesting to know, because, you know, I don't have insurance myself, so.
No, I'm still not, like, health-wise there. For the insurance. As far as the hospital goes, I've just kind of dropped off the grid. I don't think they could. I don't think they could hound me if they wanted to, because they can't find me probably. If they could, they would be hounding me though. But that's something I definitely would like to take care of in the future. But that's going to have to wait. I'll work something out with them as far as a payment plan goes. If enough time passes, they'll probably cut it to a ridiculous amount just in the hopes to get something. I wish I
They
could.
will.
I wish I could just afford to pay them all back in a lump sum, but it was just too much, the amount. So I will when I can. Not trying to dodge anything per se. I absolutely will. They will get their money. It's just a matter of when am I able? I can barely survive right now as it is. So that's something that I'm going to have to consider and address in the future, unfortunately.
Yeah, and I know I was in the same boat as you at one point. I mean, granted, it was not as a big of a case as you, but as you said, as time goes by, and eventually they're gonna give you the real cost of it because everything is hyperinflated.
There's
So
that as
the real,
well. Yeah, because a lot of it is foreigners. They jack up costs for people like me. They jack up costs for everybody else to pay for, the foreigners, the illegals using the emergency room as their main source of health care. And, they've also have huge costs because of all the regulatory requirements of the government. So they pass those costs on to somebody like myself, $100 for an aspirin and shit like that. So, I mean, yeah, eventually it'll just get down to the actual real cost, I think.
Eventually it will. I mean, I'd never worried about the medical places. If I know I need medical treatment, I just go to Colombia. I
Well,
might
there you
do,
go.
I might do, in fact, when I go to Colombia in a week, I'm probably gonna do cataract surgery over there.
Good. Oh, wow. Okay, that's okay. Ooh.
Estimated.
Semi-serious.
Well, here's the thing, it's like, it might not be cataracts, it might be something else I can't even pronounce. The problem is my right eye, I can't see small font anymore. Like if I'm re like a small font, anything under, let's say, five, a quarter of an inch, I can't read. If it's under a quarter of an inch, I can't read it. I can't see it. It becomes blurry.
It could just mean you need bifocals.
Oh God, I hope not. I hate glasses. I'm gonna end up breaking them and losing them, so.
I wear bifocals. Yeah, I had the same problem the last time I got glasses. I was having a hard time reading stuff, and of course, then I needed bifocals. I already wore glasses though, so it wasn't really a huge transition. If you've never worn glasses before, yeah, it could be a bit of a pain.
I had LASIK. That's why I hate glasses.
Oh,
It's
no, you.
only in one eye. That's it. It's in the right eye. The left is totally fine.
It could still be, it could be that. You can get bifocals just for one eye. You can get glasses for like one lens will be just a like a glass, like it doesn't do anything, and then the other lens can have the bifocal.
Yeah, we're gonna find out in a couple of weeks, God willing, what the doctor tells me.
Well, I
So,
hope it's something simple, like that, even though you don't want to have to wear glasses. But glasses can look very distinguished and make you look smarter, so it's not necessarily a horrible thing.
especially if you get something fashionable. In that case, I'll definitely get something fashionable in that case.
Yeah, try to be like me, man. See everything. Look every. I try to make lemons out of lemonade. I don't try to view it as something sour. I try to take it and make it into something better. So look at the positive side of glasses.
Yeah, plus not to mention when I'm driving at night, the LASIK tends to wear off after 20 some years. So it might be a plus for me driving at night too. So like you said, if God gives you lemons, make lemonades.
Make lemonade. That's the way I've always tried to look at things, even more so lately. And it seems to
Yeah.
work because I'm still happy. That's one thing that, but that's a whole nother video or talk entirely.
Yeah, we should definitely do this again later, especially after half a year when I am on the road, over the road. Maybe I'll be able to fully transition into Colombia, get look at getting the TOEFL or whatever it is. So yeah, man, in half a year, We should definitely do this again if you got the time for it.
Yeah, our lives could be in a whole different place by then, and I think you're really going to like the CDL stuff. You seem like the type of personality individual that has no problem with, long
Driving.
stints of being alone and focusing for a long period of time and driving. You seem to enjoy it, so I think it'll work out very well for you.
Yeah, I just listened to all the people on MGTOW TV, you, TFM, Sandman, RPM, Hammerhand. I just listen to every. I just go down every, almost every video we have from the unique content creators like yourself.
Well, there you go. That's not a bad idea. Well, I would definitely also get that TOEFL, yeah, because that just because it gives you more options. It opens the world up for you, literally, and then you're able to go overseas and make money doing something that is essentially part-time, but you make a full-time salary and you can get out of this place, which is really what I counsel people to do, and that is the biggest bonus of pursuing that, if you ask me.
You know, my dream would be to teach English in Mongolia.
You can. You
Yeah.
can. I wouldn't be surprised if you can do it there with just a TOEFL.
I'm gonna look into that tonight.
There you go. Well, see that? Your world is already opened up just from this talk, and hopefully it has this kind of effect on others, I hope.
I really hope so, especially if you're awake and you want to get the hell out and escape what's going to happen. You gotta leave America, man, until the collapse happens, and hopefully we, the righteous, take it over. Gotta get the hell out of here.
Yeah, because guys, you got to realize it's all by design. This whole culture war you see go on is just a distraction. It's just a red herring. It's just there to keep your eyes focused where the stuff ain't happening, where they don't want you to look. Like the magician with the rabbit in the hat, he distracts you and then he switches things out. No, where'd the rabbit go? It was magic. No, he just distracted you while he was doing what was actually important to the trick. Meanwhile, he had you focused on something else that was totally, completely irrelevant. That's what's going on now. This so-called culture war isn't going to result in a hill of beans difference in the end. Time to leave, and you've learned some tools here, and I think I'll make a video later on discussing more ways to get out, because that's what you need to do.
Definitely, I'll be looking forward to that video when it comes out.
Yeah, I'm gonna start planning it. Even when I get off the this call with you, that might be my next. Well, not won't be my next because I'll be a little tired for a few days, but it's definitely coming soon in the future.
Super, super. Okay, I think we touched up on everything. It was a great call. Any last minute advice or anything to the audience, or we said it all already?
No, just guys, remember to follow me on YouTube where I'm the MGTOW philosopher, and BitChute where I am the realist philosopher. And again, I'll give all the links to Amir.
Yeah.
And also, don't forget to visit MGTOW.TV and join there because that's really where you need to be for independent content that isn't being curated by people that want to control you and what you think.
That is very true. But I'm super happy to find out that they give you back your MGTOW channel back on YouTube. So they give you the MGTOW philosopher back.
Yeah, but I probably, it was probably a mistake for me to do it. I probably should have just started off fresh because it's just as shadow banned. I mean that it already had all the bans in place, and I just kept making the inflammatory content, but it's still there. But I really suggest you follow me on BitChute because that's where all
Yeah.
my, because I kept producing content there even after I got banned off YouTube. I think I have over 1,800 pieces on BitChute.
That's a
So
lot.
that's a lot of content. So again, the realist philosopher on BitChute. I am the realist philosopher on MGTOW TV also. And on YouTube, I am the MGTOW philosopher. Might have been a bad choice though, because the MGTOW, putting that back in my name also probably didn't help, but I don't care.
Yeah, I mean they're going they basically shadow banned Stardust, thinking
Oh
he's
yeah.
and he has nothing to do with MGTOW, so they're gonna
Yeah.
come with us. I mean at least if you're gonna go down on your feet rather than knees, I'd say.
Yeah. Yeah, indeed, indeed. I just that's a guys, yeah, not caring. It is a superpower. Trust me on that. I don't give a. I don't care. But anyway, yeah, that's all I got to say. So follow me on YouTube, BitChute, MGTOW TV. And if you are so inclined, please consider donating to my GoFundMe. I could really use your help. And other than that, I guess that's about it. I want to thank Amir here for talking to me. And this has been a good conversation. I think we may be done some good here. So that makes me happy.
Same here. You said it very well, and I look forward to chatting with you in the near future, God willing.
As do I, man. You take care now. Good luck with your endeavors.
Yes, sir. Same to you. All right, guys. Everybody watching this video, check out the pinned comments. I'm going to have all the links for the Realist Philosopher, and let's see what type of good stuff we can do. You guys take care of yourself out there.
My sentiments exactly. Take care, everybody.